Please go ahead. The call is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone on today's IRTP call on Tuesday the 21st of December. We have Michaela Nalon, Mike O'Connor, Michael Collins, Barbara Steele, Paul Diaz, Bob Mountain, Oliver Hope, Matt Serlin. From staff, we have Marika Konings, myself, Gisela Gruber-White. We have apologies from James Bladel, Kevin Erdman, and Anil George. If I could please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes, and also Chris Chapter will be joining us in 5 minutes. Thank you. Over to you, Michaela.
And just another update on that. Rob Golding is going to try to join the call within the next 15 minutes and wants to send on his apologies if he doesn't manage to join the call, that is. Okay, then. Good afternoon, everybody. Oh, yes. Simonetta, as well, had sent her regrets earlier. Not sure if that was captured.
Captured now. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. I'm not sure. Is there anybody else we're missing? Is anybody aware of anybody else that we're missing that we may have forgotten about? No? Okay, perfect. Okay, then. Now, the agenda for today, as you can see, is we're going to continue looking at denials reasons number 6 and 7, which is the things we'll be discussing last week with ICANN staff. Just to also inform you that Bazwa Shom has just joined the call. Then if we can just go back to discussing the little survey idea, and then if we have enough time, we will have a look at reviewing some of the comments. So, with respect to denial reasons 6 and 7, and whoever's got the really loud line, could you please mute button on your phone? Thank you. With respect to denial reasons 6 and 7, anybody have any further thoughts on this? Any further thoughts on denial reasons 6 and 7?
I think
no?
A lot of us are, I think
Paul
a lot of
Diaz,
us are reading.
Paul Diaz has an opinion. Paul, please, go ahead.
For what it's worth, Michaela, I appreciate and want to reiterate again staff's joining us last week, taking time out of their busy schedules, and do appreciate the points that they made and subsequently been made on the list. I am certainly open-minded to the idea of reworking 6 in the ways they suggested to try and address certain things. For 7, I'm sorry, I still have a hard time because they keep making, I think a number of us are making the explicit assumption that a name in lock status, and the assumption is that it's in an EPP consistent lock status. But that's an assumption. That needs to be either specified. If we're ever to drop number 7, then it needs to be made explicit elsewhere, because unfortunately we all know how things work in the ICANN world. Unless it's made explicit, somebody's going to find a way around it. As we continue to move forward, I'm open-minded and supportive of what staff has suggested, that we look to address these issues elsewhere, but want to make absolutely certain that we don't create the unintended consequences that we start paring things back and then wind up creating further headaches for ourselves, either in future working groups for transfer policy or just doing our business in general.
Okay, thank you. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to make the point that I think, in the statements that staff has made, and also the different email contribution, I think, our point was really, indeed, if denial reason 7 is deleted, it should be replaced by something else, indeed, specifically to address what Paul was stating. I don't think it was ever the intention to propose deleting denial reason 7 without any replacement or any other reference, but I think it was mainly the opinion that under where it currently sits, it doesn't really fit, as you know, I think as explained. It, in practice, there's no way to deny a transfer that hasn't or cannot be initiated. So, so I just wanted to state that for the record.
Okay, thank you. Mikey?
So I'm looking at the very, this is Mikey, the very first point, appropriate balance needs to be found between security and consumer choice. And I'm just curious how on earth we're going to do that. How are we going to know that we've found that point? I'm not disagreeing. I think it's a good idea. I'm just not sure how we go about it.
Anybody? Paul?
Thanks, Michele. I'll make the same point I made to Pam last week, in that the emphasis staff, in particular compliance, seems to be putting on consumer choice, I think is somewhat anachronistic. You know, the IRTP, the current policy that we have, when it was created in 2004, was very, very specifically dealing with portability. Many registrars were frustrated with practices in the industry that were basically holding registrars hostage at incumbent registrars, and clearly changed the policy in such a way to make it a lot easier to move names around. But again, that's six, almost 7 years ago now, and I think that you know, in the interim, that security has become a bigger concern for more people. So to Mikey's point, I'm not sure exactly what the balance will look like, but personally I'm far more interested in the security aspects than I am in the consumer choice, because I think the consumer choice issues have largely been dealt with in the marketplace, but they are not as big a problem as they were six, 7 years ago.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else have anything to add? Any comments, any input? Mikey?
This is Mikey again. I think I'm going to chime in right behind Paul. Certainly my interest in this is much more focused on security and ensuring that transfers are successful. And so I think we need to kind of keep this topic in the forefront of our minds as we go through this, because I think that may be where a fair amount of the dispute will arise.
Okay. Anybody else? Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. I just wanted to emphasize as well, in response to Paul's point, that you know, even though I'm sure many issues have worked themselves out based on the market as it is still the number one area in which I can receive complaints. And you know, I'm aware a number of those issues are related to registrants not being aware of how the policy works, or reseller-related issues. But I think compliance has provided data as well that shows that there are some areas where there are issues, and that hopefully can be clarified and indeed make it more consumer-friendly in that sense as a result.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments or thoughts on this? No. Okay.
Michele, Chris here.
Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I was just thinking a second ago, again, a lot of this is to education and making sure the registrants or their contacts understand the procedures. But then if I remember rightly on the call last week, compliance told us that the percentage of registrars that that didn't comply with the unlock was actually higher, wasn't it? It was about 13% or something like that. It's just occurred to me, I wonder what happens in those cases. Is it where I can get in contact with the registrar and they say, oh, we're sorry, we'll comply, or does it all just become a statistic and nothing happens? suppose.
Sir, Chris, sorry, Chris. What is your question? Are you asking how ICANN would process a complaint in relation to a domain unlock being refused?
Yes, and then what happens? I suppose it's a question I should have asked last week. I didn't think about it, but that's the natural follow-on, isn't it? With that 13% sitting there, is
okay. So what you want to know is, what does ICANN compliance do with complaints received from about registrars? Is that right?
And then what happens? So let's say after one email, if 11 of the 13% say, "I'm sorry, we've had a communication problem," and then the issue gets resolved, or is there a long scenario of problems of which the registrant is stuck, not being able to change their registrar, or what are they going to do with the domain?
Okay. Does anybody want to try to address Chris's query? Mikey?
Well, I have no data, but maybe to refine the query just a little bit, it would be really interesting to know whether compliance tracks the outcome of the complaint, or whether they just write the complaint down. So there's sort of three layers. Complaints, big list, we've got that. Action taken, that would be nice to know. And then final disposition or outcome, so that we can see how effective the process is. And, you know, to Chris's point, I think if it turns out that ICANN is taking a bunch of complaints and writing them down, and then nothing is happening, that's a different problem to solve than if ICANN's getting a lot of complaints and they're all getting resolved 100% satisfactorily for the complainant. So,
well, okay, Mikey, just to kind of answer it, because there's nobody from compliance on the call. We have been in contact with compliance several times in the past in relation to issues regarding, well, how can I put this? Issues surrounding domains for clients where they have been unable to get EPP keys or domains unlocked, etc., etc. And generally speaking, we found that they worked with us to make sure that the client was satisfied. It wasn't just kind of thanks for your thing and no further was heard about it or whatever.
Did McKaylee keep track of those statistics?
I can't speak to that. I have no idea what they record and don't record.
Yeah, I think that's Chris's question. Marika, could we ask the compliance gang whether they keep track of this sort of results statistics?
This is Marika. I mean, just to add on what Michaela was saying, you know, the way indeed compliance, and I think also, for example, the registrar liaison team works, is that they have a ticketing system. So indeed, when an issue comes in, it gets a ticket number, it then gets assigned to the relevant person who deals with the ticket until the issue is closed. So I think, you know, it's not that they're piled up, but basically the person looks at it, and it might be that indeed there's a response email saying, look, well, you know, ICANN is not the body that you need to go to. This is where you should go to resolve your issue. Or indeed, you know, we reach out to the registrar and try to find a solution. And I think normally that works in a way until, you know, the ticket is closed, that, you know, either the issue is resolved or the person who complained is pointed in the right direction or satisfied with the solution provided. So, I can check what kind of, you know, statistics they keep, but I think apart from, you know, categorizing and, you know, making sure that tickets get closed at the end of the process, I'm not really sure how they measure otherwise. I can check if they measure, like, you know, address by compliance or address through, you know, contacting the registrar or, you know, directed in through a different channel because not relevant to ICANN issues or something like that. So, I can look into that.
Okay, thank you. Mikey and then Chris. And just for the record, Paul Diaz just put on the chat that he didn't think detailed follow-up stats were kept. that just that something was or wasn't resolved. This was, he says, also says this was something that was on the to-do list and justification for increased compliance budget. If you remember, we discussed this some time back. Mikey, then
yeah.
Chris?
Yeah, and I think that basically, you know, the last time we really got into this with compliance, a subset of us wrote a memo to ICANN encouraging that and, you know, supporting a budget increase. And I think that given the outcome of the budget process, it might not be a bad idea to think about keeping this issue sort of on the forefront, because without metrics as to what actually happens, we don't really have a way to know, A, how effective the policy is today, nor do we know where we need to focus in order to improve it, if or even if it needs to be improved at all. So, you know, I think Chris is on the right trajectory here. And then, Marika, I think to the extent, if they just come back and say sort of what they said before, which was, well, we don't really keep track of that, then that's one outcome that we can take note of and maybe write something about. But if they come back and say that their outcome categories are as broad as the ones that you're describing, which is basically, you know, we solved it, somebody else solved it, or they went away, we might encourage them to narrow that a bit and start keeping track of how they solved it and who took what action. Because the trouble that we run into in the policymaking process so much is that we get stuck because we don't have good information on which to make policy. And I think this might be a good example of that.
Thank you, Mikey. Chris?
Yeah, just to reiterate, really, it's just to try and get a feel for the depth of it, whether we're talking of lots of little problems that are solved quite easily by compliance or problems that have got such a depth that they really take a lot of work and to get solved. Good.
Okay. I'll just put myself on the queue just to echo this thing about the data. We are constantly being asked to look at various aspects of ICANN policy that impacts on the RAA based on the supposed existence of problems. So it would be helpful if we had actual data as opposed to, oh my God, there is a problem, but no real details. Okay, any other thoughts on this subject, or shall we move on? Okay, we'll move on. Bob, you're all by yourself.
I am, but it's okay. I'm a big boy.
Are you not really? You're not really. Anyway, because you're not tiny either. Do you have any thoughts on this?
I do, yeah. Bob Mountain speaking. I guess so. You know, just to level set everybody, we had a proposal, which was that Tim and Etta and I would reach out to some people that we identified representing the various cohorts to get the aftermarket perspective on ETRP. Some folks have voiced some concern about that. Primarily, I believe the reluctance is to go out with a survey like this strictly to the aftermarket cohorts. So understand that. And, you know, I've volunteered a couple of other suggestions, one which is to go out with the survey as it is now with and gather the data, use that as a, one point of information. However, with the option to expand that survey to people who are not in the aftermarket perspective, are not in the aftermarket at a later date. That's certainly one course of action. The other course of action is to expand the cohorts so that it would include others that are not aftermarket and do it all at once. I'm fine either way. I'd like to get something going sooner rather than later. We've been, you know, obviously talking about this for quite a while. So I think, you know, plan, part A would certainly be the fastest. We have the cohorts identified. We have the contacts identified. We're ready to go this week. But, if there are concerns, I'd like other recommendations as to what people, if those two courses of action that I've laid out, you know, don't work, then what are the others? But you know, I'd love some suggestions on what people think we should do as opposed to the plans that we've laid out. So I'll turn it over to the group.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you. Any thoughts? Any input? Mikey?
This is Mikey again. I'm actually fine with either of those plans. I think that one approach to this, as Bob says, is to go quickly out to a narrow cohort, bring back the data, and make it clear that it's from a narrow group of people, that it's not a, you know, it's not a total sample of the total ICANN community, but rather it's a conversation with a group of people that's very concerned about this in order to find out more about their concern and also hopefully find out some suggestions as to how we could do this in a way that meets their needs, but also meets the needs that we identified in coming up with the thing in the first place. So I'm fine with that. It's, you know, I think we would need to make it, we would just need to make it really clear that this is not necessarily something that we're automatically going to act on, but that it's an important voice that we need to hear and understand. I'm also fine with going out to a broader community, but I certainly understand Bob's concern that, you know, that's going to take longer both to go out because it's going to take longer to find the right people and also it's going to take longer to get everything back and it's going to take longer to analyze. And we may not, we may actually get less clear feedback than if we just went with a targeted one. Is Matt on the call today?
Who?
Serlin?
Who? Yeah. Oh, Serlin, yeah, he's there.
Okay. So you're gonna, I'm sure you're going to chime in, too. But I was going to echo your points, but I won't. So that's sort of where I'm at. I'm fine with both of those approaches, Bob.
Matt?
Thanks, Michele, and thanks, Bob, and Mikey as well. Yeah, I mean, I guess at the end of the day, I'd be fine with moving forward in that manner, you know, as well. If it's just to Mikey's point, just to clarify that it was, you know, that any feedback we get from this group is sort of caveated with the fact that it is from a very targeted, specific group that we, you know, fully aware of the fact that it's not representative of the wider community and that, you know, we did this really to get one group's point of view. The thing that I worry about is once the rest of the community sees that, or are they going to then expect us to go out and get every other individual group's thoughts and experiences? So I just wonder if we're going to end up right back in the same place and having, you know, spent the time that, that Bob and Simonetta have put into this and then going out to their specific group and then us getting that feedback and going through it and then exposing it to the community only to the, for the community to say, hey, wait a minute, now you need to go out and talk to this group, or you need to go out and talk to that group. So I don't know if it's going to bias anything. I still think we might end up having to make this a broader survey at the end of the day. But in the meantime, yeah, I'm fine with either, as Bob explained.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else?
Well, this is Mikey. I'm back in the queue. That's the second time up for me.
Okay, I'm going to skip you for the moment. I'll come back to you shortly, Mikey.
Okay.
I'm going to go to Bob and then to you.
Oh, okay. No, I was just going to make one other point that if you know, if the recommendation was to move forward with the cohorts identified now, one of the caveats was that the individuals who we've identified would not be, you know, would not be their, you know, the specific individuals would not be disclosed as part of this. Since this is all public record, we would, you know, refer to them as domain investor, you know, A or domain investor X or something like that. So just a point that we would not be, you know, making the specific identities available for all these folks that we've that have agreed to talk to us.
Okay, thank you. Then Mikey?
I have to cogitate about the masking of the identities. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that. But the point I was going to make is
one
that...
Just one thing, Mikey. We have done something similar in the past in other working groups with respect to surveys that were conducted with registrars.
Oh, okay. Well, let me.
And you're actually on those working groups.
You know, yeah, that's true. Okay. I think the main point I was going to make is that it is to Matt's point, which is I think that in order to inoculate ourselves against the problem that Matt's raising, which is that everybody else would then want to be surveyed, gets back to the way we frame this. I think we have to be very clear that we are undertaking this survey in response to issues that were raised during the public comment period by a very narrow group of people, and that we are not necessarily going to take their advice. I mean, that's probably less diplomatic than we want to say it in the write-up, but the concern, and I would have the, I have the same concern, which is that by only surveying one group and then having this information, we, the working group, are then compelled to follow their advice. And I think we need to make it absolutely clear that we're not, that's not our intent. Our intent is to understand their issues better and solicit their ideas as to how to accomplish what we have pretty much agreed we want to accomplish in a way that meets their needs better. But if the framing doesn't make that clear, then Matt's absolutely right. Then we have to go to the whole community, because otherwise we're not doing justice to what we're here for.
Okay, thank you, Mikey. Bob?
Yes, thanks, McKinley. Mikey, I guess just a question then, how is that position, or how are those expectations best set? Is that part of the survey where you're communicating those expectations to the cohort? Is that the way that the data is communicated and reported back to the group? Is it both? I think it's a great suggestion. I just want to make sure we action that.
I think that probably the answer is sort of in response to all restaurant menu items. Yes, please. I think we do it everywhere. You know, I think we do it in the survey document, whatever that turns out to be. I think we do it in the announcement of that document. I think we do it in our own reports. You know, I think we have to do that framing sort of as many places as we can, just so that it's very, very clear, and that people have lots of ways to find that out.
Yeah, got it.
Okay. Anybody else have any input or thoughts on this at this time? Okay, I'll take that silence to mean no. So, guys, how would you like, and girls, guys, I'm Irish, so guys is kind of, you know, it covers both genders. How would you like to proceed? Bob, then Mikey.
Okay. So it sounds to me like there's no strenuous objection to going out with the survey, as defined now, to the cohorts we've identified, with the proviso that we set and manage expectations at all possible touch points. What I would propose is that we revise the email that was to go out with a cut at the positioning that Mikey has suggested. I can circulate that to the group, today, and get feedback. If the group is okay, once we finish the feedback, then we're ready to go out to the cohorts, immediately after we finish the communication material.
Okay, thank you. Mikey is giving us a tick, which we will take to mean that he approves. Does anybody else have any other thoughts on this? Matt Serlin, he was getting tired of his voodoo doll and is now ticking and is giving us an approval. Sorry, Matt, the voodoo doll was required. Bob Mountain is also happy. Okay, so we'll proceed. Unless I hear some massive amount of criticism. We'll move forward with this. Bob will circulate stuff to the list later today or tomorrow or something, and then we'll move forward from there. Okay, next item on the agenda is continuing the review of the comments. Marika, you have a much better memory than I do. Where were we in this? I can't quite recall.
This is Marika. I'm just scrolling down. I think we were at issue C. I'm trying to see which one is the first comment. Hold on a second. Comment 33.
Comment 33.
On page 11.
Page 11. Okay. You have much better memory than the rest of us. Okay. Comment, question, there was 33. We're into some of the comments from George Kirikos. Charter question thing, blah, blah, blah. Hold on. Okay, so this was something that we were looking at, and Pam Little replied to George's query about voluntarily on the list in the last couple of days, I believe.
That's correct.
Okay, do we want to go into this now, or shall we wait until, should we kind of take it that we've already discussed this quite a bit and mark it as noted? Noted, and also to reference Pam Little's reply. Mikey, go ahead.
I'm fine with that. I think the only other thing is if we decide to take it up, we should probably wait till James is on the call.
Or some other representative of that registrar.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, we'll just note that for the moment, and if we want to have further discussion, we shall defer until such time as a representative of the registrar in question is available to defend their position. One second now. So, this is in relation to the definition of a registrant. It is important to be careful about how one defines a registrant, because the label one attaches to a certain registrant might change, but it's not considered a change of registrant. Which one of those two emails is he referring to? Do you know, Marika, because you've put two links in there.
This is Marika. I mean, the links that are in there are basically his posts to the public comment forum, because he posted several comments, and some he referenced emails that he sent to the mailing list, and some he posted blog posts that he had written somewhere else. So, his comments are covered in those different posts to the public comment forum.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you. Does anybody want to make any comments or give any feedback on this? Mikey?
This is Mikey. Did we ever get a definition? Didn't we run into this problem ourselves where we sort of said, what is a registrant? Did we ever pound that nail down and actually get one?
I think we've discussed it a bit, but I don't think we've ever fully defined it, unless somebody else can correct my recollection. Marika?
This is Marika. If I recall well, I think James did put forward a suggestion, but I don't know how far that went in getting agreement from the group or whether further discussion is needed on that. But I do recall that at some point I think he sent in some suggested language that might serve as a basis for further discussion, and I'm happy to try and dig that out or check with James where that stands.
Okay, thank you. Might not be a bad idea if we just were to follow up on that. So,
Yeah, this is Mikey again. I think given that what we're doing on this list is just noting what we're going to do, I think what we might want to say is something like, the working group agrees that this is a good idea and we'll pursue it, or something like that.
Okay. Anybody else have any other thoughts on this? And Bob agrees. Now, this is a follow-up in some respects to George Kourakos's comment. This is from the Registrar Constituency Stakeholder Group. In relation to both chart question B and C, the working group should develop a definition of the term change of registrant, as it is an important precursor to settling disputes between registrant and admin contact. Mikey again?
Partly this is sort of a see above. You know, I think I agree with this. I think that in addition to defining once and for all what a registrant is, we ought to nail this down as well.
This is Michele, just to echo that, I also think if you can't define a registrant, you won't be able to define a change of registrant.
Yeah.
Chicken egg type scenario.
Right.
Or fill in with your own perfect choice. Next item, the working group should further explore the existing processes in place for trying to prevent hijacking attempts, as these could serve as best practices to be recommended for adoption by registrars. Any thoughts on that? Mikey again?
I agree, but only I would refine this just a little bit in that the scope of this could get pretty broad. We might want to narrow the question just a little bit to focus in on preventing hijacking attempts during IRTP, you know, during the inter-registrar transfer process rather than across the board. But in general, I think that's not a bad idea. You know, learn from best practices. It's often cheap and effective, so I'd accept that one.
So maybe something on the lines of, yes, we agree, however, we need to be careful that we do not go too far beyond the scope of this working group?
Yeah, or just be mindful of the scope of the working group, something like that.
Okay. Marika?
Yeah, this is Rick. I had a question to that in relation to this this comment, and I think it follows on from a comment that Matt actually made on the previous call. Because making that information available, doesn't that, you know, make it as well obvious for hijackers how to go around it? So, you know, how could that work, or how much details can you provide, you know, before it becomes actually of interest to hijackers, how they can actually get around it and you know, make use of that information. So, you know, I don't know if this, for example, links together as well, because I know other working groups have had discussions as well on best practices and then, you know, how those could be built and shared. And I don't know if this is an instance where you would look at best practices that would be, you know, confidentially shared, for example, instead of, you know, publicly posted. Or it would be interesting to hear, you know, registrar's perspective on that.
Okay. Any registrars like to jump in before I start picking on people? Matt?
Thanks, Michele. Yeah, Marika, I think it was my comment from the last call. And yeah, essentially, I do have concern that, you know, if we start, if registrars are required, essentially, to start publishing their security practices, then it's essentially a blueprint for hijackers to understand what their systems are, what measures they have in place, and how to get around them, and how to social engineer them, and things like that. So yeah, I think I would echo, you know, I'm certainly not speaking for all registrars, but I would imagine that a high percentage of registrars would share that view as well. And so I'll play Michele and pick on other folks on the line, like Michele and Paul. Yeah, so I see Paul in the chat has agreed. It just, you know, having some sense of security being, you know, behind the firewall is not only a comfort to registrars operationally, but also to our clients as well.
Well, I'll take that since you picked on me, Matt. You're trying to get revenge on me.
Love that.
Sorry?
But I love that.
What, did you try to take revenge?
Yeah, well, you know, you get to wield your power most of the time, and the tables got turned for once. Good.
Okay, that's fine. Duly noted, and a new voodoo doll shall be put together. I would agree, broadly speaking, with what Matt was saying. However, I would also be very happy if there was more sharing and pooling of resources between registrars behind closed doors, because a lot of the problems that would affect us would affect GoDaddy, would affect Network Solutions, would affect, you know, various other registrars. But I wouldn't be too happy about sharing a lot of this information in broad daylight, because I think that, as others have said, that would be providing a blueprint. Matt?
Yeah, no, it's a good point. And, you know, just to sort of pick up on what you said, having some sort of, you know, and I think there's, you know, in the new RAA, there's something about a designated security contact for all registrars. But what it doesn't say is, you know, that those points of contact actually need to be responsive, and that there's certain thresholds that registrars, in dealing with each other or in dealing with registries or in dealing with ICANN, have to be responsive. And so I'd be very supportive of things that we put in place that were, to Michele's point, more behind the scenes. So if I have a registrar, you know, that we have a name that's been hijacked and moved to this registrar, you know, I should be able to get someone responsive that understands, you know, the business, that can look into the issue and work to get it resolved in an expedient sort of way. That's a completely different thing to me than, you know, publishing all of our security stuff. So I'd agree with you. Shocking.
Oh, my God. Well, the end is nigh. Matt Serlin from Mark Monitor agrees with Michele. Oh, my God. Anybody else have any other thoughts on this?
This is Mikey.
Yes, go ahead.
I think the way we summarize this conversation is to acknowledge the fact that we as a working group do not want to publish a blueprint for attackers. At the same time, we want to understand the processes, so acknowledge that George has got a good point, and that understanding those processes could benefit a number of registrars, especially registrars who are not as advanced in terms of security. So I think that what we might want to say is George raises a good point. We have some operational difficulties in ensuring that security is not breached while we explore it, and maybe look at some models like the ESSAC model, where, you know, they keep quite a lot of information.
That's actually a comment from the registrar group, not from George Kirikos.
Pardon me?
This comment is from the registrar group, not from George Kirikos.
Oh,
as just been pointed
out. Sorry. Well, all the better. Then I agree with the registrar group. So anyway, you know, I think that what we have talked our way through is the notion that, yes, we want to pursue this, but, yes, we also want to keep the information out of the public eye, and we need a mechanism to do that.
Okay, perfect. Right, next comment we had, I remember this. This was from Rob Hall. Who brought up the matter of abolishing locks altogether during the Brussels meeting. Mikey?
I don't think he said abolish locks altogether. I think he said that the technology has changed so that now with EPP essentially being the controlling technology, some of the locks-related policy issues are no longer relevant. And I think that a good example of that is the conversation we had last week with staff, where when there's an EPP lock, a registrar can't even initiate it. So I'm not sure he said get rid of locks altogether, but rather step back from the different states of the technology and figure out which of the things in the policy are obsolete.
Okay, thank you. Barbara?
This is Barbara. I do hope you didn't say that, completely abolish locks, because obviously there are some circumstances when we're required to, in essence, lock down a name to prevent any additional changes from happening to it while perhaps a dispute is pending. So that's my only comment, that there are still circumstances when, by law or process, that we would be required to lock names down.
Okay, thank you. Paul Diaz?
Yeah, thanks, Michele. Just backing up with both Mikey and Barbara said, I wasn't exactly clear on what Rob was arguing. Remember, he was basically having an ongoing battle over the phone with George, and they were speaking over each other, and it was kind of a mess, and I have a feeling that we're probably paraphrasing to a fault when we say abolish altogether. I don't think that was his intention, more towards what both Mike and Barbara are saying, that as long as it's within the existing EPP compliance system, the other things don't need to exist. The problem is, when you have those super secret registrar locks that nobody ever explains how it works and you have no way of finding out until you try and move a name, that's different. But the idea of wholesale doing away with locks is basically a non-starter, but I don't really think that's what he was arguing. If this is an issue for anybody, I would suggest that, we reach out to Rob. He's provided working groups assistance in the past. I'm sure he would be happy to clarify his position.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else want to throw themselves under this one? No? Okay, then. As we're coming towards the top of the hour, and I'm afraid if we go into something else, we could end up running over very, very easily. What I would suggest we do is that we look to picking up from here on the next call. And we will also look forward to a lovely email from Bob at some point. Does anybody have any other matters that they wish to raise at this juncture?
Maybe that's the kit you need, the How to Construct a Voodoo Doll kit.
Well, I couldn't possibly share my secrets on doing that, because remember, it's an Irish voodoo doll.
Ah.
Yeah. Very important. There's a significant...
Never mind. Maybe we could put that under SX Sub Rosa blanket as well.
We could. Okay, then. Anybody have anything else? If not, then we will be. Then we will adjourn until next week, and we'll see how many people manage to make it onto the call next week. Okay, have a good week, people. Bye bye.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kelly.
Thank you.